How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. It turns out I was nice, and despite all the fun I had with Zach on yesterday's show, I brought Harrison back for this one. You guys are missing this right now, but Harrison's wearing a Santa sweater, which is just incredible. How comfortable is that? It looks really comfortable.
It's more comfortable than when I was listening to the podcast from last night and you asked Zach Harper to take my job. Like, do it off the air, man.
Couldn't help it. I got swept up in the moment, and we had a pretty decent chemistry, and it felt right. And I apologize that D'Angelo Russell was recording.
No, honestly, that's one of those things where, like, if I'm a basketball player in this situation, I give the correct answer, where it's like, this is a business. Like, I know every team has to look and do what's best for the organization and look to make upgrades where they can, and there's a bank in every city. So, you know, if I get traded to Utah for Zach Harper, that's okay.
Before we go on with the show, and we actually have a pretty fun show scheduled for you guys today. We're going to break out a brand new segment, so we hope everybody enjoys that new segment. But before we get to that, make sure you're finding the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate on your first purchase using the app. Today's show, we're going to talk about D'Angelo Russell. Somehow people think we hate the kid. And I don't think that's true, even despite him blocking me on Twitter. I still don't dislike the kid. We're going to talk about the Lakers' next 12 games. It's a pretty, I would say it's by far the toughest stretch that they're going to play this season, right?
They have two gimmies against the Warriors. What are you talking about?
Fair point. Like I said earlier, we're going to introduce a brand new segment called BS Trade Reports, and basically it's where I get to speculate about any player and figure out ways for him to come to the Lakers. This time it's going to be Paul George, and then finally Ivica Zubac is going to make his D-League debut with the Defenders. Harrison is going to be in the house for that. We are going to talk about and preview that and see what we can, see what each of us expect from that. But that's all coming in a matter of minutes. Let's go ahead and start with D'Angelo Russell. Harrison, why do you hate D'Angelo Russell?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty obvious. I don't hate D'Angelo Russell, despite people getting very upset over one of our podcast titles. Mm-hmm. So, D'Angelo, I don't hate D'Angelo Russell. I think he's going to be a great player. I've said on probably 80% of our podcasts that he's the Lakers' young player that I'm the highest on. So, yeah, this idea that we don't think D'Angelo Russell is going to be good is crazy to me. I don't particularly want to get into, like, a straw man argument with somebody who's not here. But, I think D'Angelo Russell is going to be great, and I think that he showed all of the reasons why he's going to be great last night.
So here's the thing, and look, I used to be right there. I used to get all kinds of angry at websites, you know, whether it's blogging sites, whatever, for clickbait or what I perceived as clickbait. But at the end of the day, the purpose of a title is to grab somebody's attention, right? And while you want to call it clickbait, or while people want to call it clickbait, yes, that's the point. You want to bait somebody into listening or reading whatever you're reading. No. Now what I'm going to say is, it's annoying when, like, you know, a trade rumor is brought about that is completely implausible. You know, you're only bringing somebody to the table to read something that you're wildly speculating on, and there's no actual value to the thing that you're reading or listening to in the case of a podcast. But in this case, we asked a question. We asked, hey, is it time to worry about D'Angelo Russell? And both Harrison and I said that no, it is not. It by no means is it time to worry. And we apologize if people are going to take that as to, you know, as a cheap promo, you know, of the show, but really we were asking a question, we answered the question, and we gave reasons as to why people might be worried. But at the end of the day, like, there's nothing that, you know, you can necessarily hold somebody to when you write a headline, and the purpose of the headline is to get some attention. Otherwise, yeah. Like, otherwise, headlines would be 3,000 words long.
Well, I think there's a middle ground there. But the thing that I wanted to touch on was, to me, clickbait has always been if something is misleading. If it's leading you to click something and you're not really delivering on that promise. And one thing that I always try to do is deliver on the promise mm-hmm. of a headline. And I felt like we did that. And there are people that are worried about D'Angelo Russell. There are always going to be people that overreact to early season struggles for players. We see it every year, just like there are people that overreact to early season greatness from players, and mm-hmm. they start to have too high of expectations for them because they show a lot, and then that player regresses to the mean, and all of a sudden they're disappointing. Breaking. Instead of it just that being their average.
Breaking: Harrison Fagan is now out on Julius Randle. That's unfortunate. All that time, and here we are, and now you're just saying he's going to regress to the mean. Now, you make a good point there when you say that you're you know, you want to make good on a promise of a headline, right? Now, had the headline been why we're worried about D'Angelo Russell, and then we would have said that we're actually not worried about D'Angelo Russell, then that would be flat out clickbait, where we lied to people and said that, you know, we promised a podcast that did not take place. Yeah. We asked a question, we talked about the topic, and again, I am sorry if people took that the wrong way. I'm sure Harrison, who wrote the headline, took it through. I'm not selling you down the river, I promise. I'm kind of sort of selling you down the river. But we are sorry if people took that to mean that we are down on the kid. But if you would have just listened to the show for longer than 30 seconds, you might have been able to figure out that we aren't actually down on him. And that very night, he, you know, he proved any such doubters wrong. And that was fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he was phenomenal against the Nets. He really showed, getting past our debate over SEO tactics, I think, he really showed everything that the Lakers hope he can be. The every single time that the Nets went under a screen against him, he was rising and firing. He showed some of the playmaking ability that he has in the pick and roll with Mozgov. He actually assisted or scored on the Lakers' first 16 points of the quarter, or of the game, I guess. And I think almost even more crucially than the hot start was he played well enough on defense and well enough on offense, I guess, as well. But it was mostly defense that Luke Walton was emphasizing to us after the game, that he stayed in and closed the game over Lou Williams, which we haven't seen every single time this year. And he didn't do it because he was the younger player. He did it because he earned those minutes. And I thought that that was really important for him. And while he was kind of really quick to kind of demur to his teammates and say, like, hey, thank you for setting me up and all that stuff after the game, I think he deserves a lot of credit for being ready for exactly what the Nets were going to do against him, and being aggressive, and then I guess for being a great three-point shooter.
Now, I don't think it's fair for anybody to expect that he's going to start all games from now on making, you know, five of five, or even four of four, or three of three, three pointers to start, especially off of the dribble.
Hater.
Dang it, here I go again. I just can't buy in, according to one listener. What I do think, or what I found really interesting, was there was a trend that was starting to build up steam in terms of how multiple teams at that point were defending D'Angelo Russell on the pick and roll, especially above or near the three-point line, where the screen was set, and then the point guard who was guarding D'Angelo Russell was going underneath it, and because that guard was going underneath the screen, there was not as much hedging that was needed to be done by the big whose guy was setting the screen, and that pretty much just meant it was up to Russell to figure out a play to make when nobody is essentially guarding him. And if nobody is essentially guarding him in that kind of situation, what's the only logical step to take? He's got to shoot it, right?
Okay, yeah. For a second, I was like, are you asking me? Or yeah, I mean, you gotta let it fly.
Yeah, you have to shoot it. And that was kind of the thing that, you know, I brought that up on the halftime show for Silver Screen and Roll on Facebook. And then before that, I kind of said that the only thing he can really do is let a bunch of threes fly and hope that they go in and force the team to adjust. In the Brooklyn game, he forced that team to adjust. And as you watch that game go along, the defense stretched out to 35, 40 feet up. And then that meant when that screen was taking place, he now had a defender behind him and his own guy. The hedger didn't. There's nothing much you can do when you're hedging at 40 feet out. So now all of a sudden the Lakers are kind of in this 4-on-3 situation, or at the very worst, a 3-on-3 situation, and that's a really easy situation to make a pass out of. And he,
a lot of spacing.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of space for him to make it work. Now, the defense kind of failed them as the game went along. I thought their rotations, especially to guard the rim, weren't very good.
If the Nets scored more than three baskets outside of the paint, I didn't see them.
Yeah, right. So the defense wasn't great. But in terms of what Russell was doing offensively, and I didn't think he was necessarily the problem defensively. Like you said, he did everything that you would want him to be able to do. And that was kind of the game that we were hoping to watch. And when we asked about whether or not it was time to worry about D'Angelo Russell, I think we even said that he could play a strong game against the Brooklyn Nets because their backcourt was really, really bad, right?
Yeah, we were kind of saying, like, Jeremy Lin's going to be out, and that's going to be a rough night for them. And it definitely, definitely was. I was actually talking to Larry Nance Jr. after the game, and I asked him what he was thinking when Russell was going off in that first quarter, and he just said, he's like, what does D'Angelo have against Brooklyn? And yeah, I mean, like Russell was kind of letting fly from the second he walked out onto the court at Staples Center. Even before the game, he was players have predetermined warm-up times, and like everyone was running behind. I don't know who started, but somebody had started a little late, and so I had heard one of the coaches explain that to Randall, that that's why he was going to start a little late, and so he was still going when Russell came out for his time, and a ball bounced towards Russell, and Randall is kind of warming up near the post with a coach, and Russell lets fly from like near half court anyway, and I mean he bricked it, and it like went right in the middle of their drill, and they just kind of looked over at him, and D'Angelo laughed and went and sat down on the bench to wait his turn. But I mean, it was one of the few shots he was going to miss for a while. It was pretty funny to see.
To refresh everybody's memory, the original Ice in My Veins game occurred against the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
So when Larry Nance Jr. brings up, what does he have against Brooklyn? That 39-point game that D'Angelo Russell exploded for last year took place against these Nets. And then, like you said, he made a point out of shooting early. And I think that was something that was going to take place no matter who they played against, which to me speaks to, one, attentiveness on D'Angelo Russell's part. Like, it's really easy to kind of say, hey, it's coaching. You know, they gave him a directive to, you know, to adjust to how teams are playing him. But at the end of the day, it's up to the actual player to take note of that and then take that next step of actually performing on a court. Whereas somebody like Russell Westbrook won't even take that first step of noticing stuff in film. And you know, it's nice to see Russell, somebody who keeps on getting these questions about his maturity, make a very mature adjustment against an NBA defense that is very noticeable, and you saw the dividends pay offensively. Now, that's against the Brooklyn Nets, and the Lakers have this insane stretch ahead of them, starting with the San Antonio Spurs. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Kawhi Leonard start tomorrow on D'Angelo Russell. I would actually be surprised if he doesn't start against D'Angelo Russell, right? So we could very easily...
I don't know that he'll start the game against him. I think that he'll see some time on him.
Who's Kawhi Leonard going to... It's not... They're going to waste Kawhi Leonard on Luol Deng's corpse?
I mean, that's a fair point. I just think generally coaches don't go to that kind of thing right out of the gate.
Yeah, I could see Pop doing that, because I think the Lakers, it's pretty obvious at this point, especially with the starters, because the starters played really well last night, right?
Yeah.
And that
it was arguably their best game.
Right. The starters played really well, and they kind of go as Russell goes, because as much praise as Julius Randle has deserved this year, right? Not just that he's gotten, but that he's deserved this year.
So wait, you don't think his career's in the balance anymore?
Hey, you're the one who just said he was going to regress to the mean earlier in the show, so...
I don't think I said that. I think you took me saying that some players regress to the mean as him. I actually wasn't thinking of him at all. I was thinking of DeMar DeRozan. But, yeah, I mean, Randle is a fair point. He might drop off a little bit. I think his finishing around the rim is probably unsustainable. But, I mean, he showed he's a good player. I think he's going to continue to be a good player.
Right. So, back on the D'Angelo Russell thing, I actually do think they'll start with Kawhi on him, because the starters really, that was, like you said, their best game, and it came about because Russell played as well as he did to start, right? And so if I'm Greg Popovich, I'm kind of saying, well, it'd be nice to make sure that this Lakers starting unit doesn't get off to the same kind of start, because when the bench comes in, we don't know what they're going to do. So far this year, they've been world beaters, right? So why risk the Lakers starting five, get off to a good start, and then have that be followed by the starting or by the bench unit coming in and doing what they've done all year? And now all of a sudden the Spurs are kind of sort of down by 12 points, 10, 12 points because of the combination of those two things. And again, who else is Kawhi Leonard going to guard? Like, there's nobody else on the Lakers starting unit that's worth using Kawhi Leonard on.
Yeah, that's a fair point. My only counter is what I said before. Coaches, I don't think generally go to that stuff right out of the gate in a regular season game. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's not what I would deem the most likely outcome.
Yeah. So just to recap,
Russell good, Randall good, Harrison and Anthony good.
I wouldn't go so far as to say
okay.
That last part.
Harrison and Anthony not Laker haters.
Harrison and Anthony are here, and then those other guys are actually good.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's go ahead and move on, though. We talked about the San Antonio game that's coming next, but the Lakers' next 12 are pretty insane. They have... I thought I had this pulled up, but I do not.
I got it. They have their next game is against San Antonio. Then they have the Bulls on Sunday. They have San Antonio on Friday, the Bulls on Sunday, and then they host Oklahoma City on Tuesday, and then travel to Golden State for a Wednesday game, and then they host Golden State on the following Friday. Then they host Atlanta, and then they travel on the road for three games, Chicago, Toronto, and Memphis, and then they host Utah before hitting the road for Houston, and then I think that's the end of kind of the brutal stretch. I think that was 12 games, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically my hope is over this next 12 that they go 4-8, right? I think the Chicago games are both winnable. New Orleans sucks, so that's winnable. Oklahoma City kind of goes as Russell Westbrook goes, but it's kind of a tough matchup because Russell Westbrook plays point guard, and you know, we just talked about what D'Angelo Russell playing well does for the Lakers. So those kind of counterbalance each other. The Lakers have already beaten Atlanta. So there are games that are semi, you know, kind of sort of winnable there.
Which is weird, again, to be looking at the schedule and saying there are winnable games for the Lakers. Last year, that happened like four times a year where you'd assume there were a couple teams they'd beat. And then the rest of the time, it's like, well, I don't know. Like, maybe they'll have a chance if everything goes right.
So, all right. So, of those 12, Chicago, they play twice. I think both of those feel like they could split the Chicago games, I think. Right?
Yeah, I think the Sunday game against Chicago this coming Sunday is more winnable because the second one is they fly into Chicago after playing an 8 o'clock game against New Orleans the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like a little rough. 8 o'clock Eastern, but I mean, that's a little rough to mm-hmm. like road back to back. Those are always tough. So I think the first game with Chicago may be a little bit more winnable.
Yep. So if they can split, you know, if they win one of the Chicago games, and then they beat New Orleans. Memphis hasn't been. I mean, now Memphis beat the Clippers tonight, or last night by the time people are listening to this, which is a good win for them, but they haven't performed to expectations so far this year. So that feels like it could be winnable there. But again, that comes on the second night of a back to back, which isn't great. They're playing 24 hours basically later after they play Toronto.
Yeah, that's a four game. That's also the fifth game fourth game in five nights. Excuse me.
Yep. And then they also, you know, the other game that I'm kind of looking at here is at Houston, which Houston
fourth game in five nights on the road, to be clear.
Yeah.
And that, so yeah.
Yeah. So the Memphis game, you know, that might wind up being a schedule loss, even though it feels like a semi winnable game. In a vacuum. Now the Houston game feels winnable because they've already beaten them, and Houston has been kind of up and down so far this year. But you know, when you're looking at those 12 games, coming out with four wins out of those 12 games to me feels like an overall win.
Yeah, that would be big. It's going to be tough.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough. I mean, they have two easy ones against Golden State right in the middle there, who, you know, they're undefeated against in their last two regular season games. So I think people forget that. But other than like kind of those easy ones, I don't know I mean, Golden State, that's going to be tough, especially at Golden State on the second night of a back to back is going to be really tough,
yeah.
Especially with Golden State still having the taste in their mouths from the last time they played the Lakers in Staples Center.
And,
so,
and Klay Thompson's shot has kind of come around.
Yeah,
and
Klay Thompson missed a lot of open threes against the Lakers, if I remember correctly.
So, I look.
So, is that a 40-point loss? Are we?
here's the thing. We talk about, you know, if the Lakers can go 4-8, great. If they can, you know, if they go 3-9, whatever. If they go 2-10, whatever. If they go 6-6 by some act of God, awesome. To me, the
I think it would actually take an act of God,
an act of Tim Tebow. But if they could somehow,
that was a really topical reference.
he's still playing baseball somehow.
I just laughed really hard about that in 2010.
And on the back of Harrison's Santa sweatshirt that he's wearing right now, it actually says Tebow, so he's lying to everybody. But what I was going to say, though, was the actual wins and losses for this don't matter at all to me. They
nope.
really don't. They, for me, and this should be for everybody, and this is even with this whole playoff topic still being a thing, to me what matters endlessly more, exponentially more, is the Lakers' ability to actually pull, you know, stay with these games. Like if they're close in the fourth quarter with San Antonio, I'm calling that a win, right?
That's a moral victory.
Yeah, and people want to discount moral victories or say that there's no such thing as a moral victory. This is a young Lakers team.
Luke Walton himself has said that he takes moral victories during the season.
Right, and the idea that there's no such thing as a moral victory is the kind of thing that the former coach would say. you know. And if you're agreeing with the former coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, you're probably saying dumb things about basketball. Now,
should I hit it with the flame sound effect, or we're just
now what the solace that is there to be taken after the Lakers 12 games is that after they get through the stretch, they play Phoenix, they play the Knicks, they play Sacramento, they play Brooklyn, then they play Philadelphia, and all five of those games feel winnable. And so for me, what's a lot more important, you know, even if you're discounting moral victories, what feels a lot more important to me is that the Lakers remain optimistic, because after they get through the stretch, they have those winnable games where they could get back on track. And Laker teams of the last couple of years would probably look at this and say, you know, an 8 or 10 game losing streak would really quickly become a 20 game losing streak. Because they're
okay. I don't know that they ever lost 20 games in
a row.
Well,
what I'm saying in this situation here, so like if they start snowballing in terms of negativity, and negativity, optimism, they're both intangible things, right? So and a lot of people discount momentum as a whole, which I don't quite agree with. But if the Lakers can remain optimistic despite the incoming struggles, and get back on track in those next five games, they could still be right around 500. And for those who continue to talk about the playoffs, I do think the Western Conference playoffs are going to be around, you know, that 500 mark. And the Lakers are still right back in it, or they would remain in the thick of things. And if they remain in the thick of things after the next 17 games or so, by the time they play Cleveland on Saturday, December 17th, then you look at this stretch as a complete victory that nobody could have seen coming.
Yeah, and to be clear, after that 12-game stretch that we mentioned earlier, that's going to be really tough coming up over the next month or so for the team. They come out of that and they have Phoenix, the New York Knicks, Sacramento, Brooklyn, and Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not so bad.
And then even after that, like, they play Cleveland, which is probably going to be a loss, but and Charlotte is playing pretty good basketball.
Wow, bold prediction. Yeah. Cleveland on the road is a loss. You think so?
I'm out here on this limb, man. I'm
hey,
out
actually,
here
maybe the Cavs sit LeBron that game.
but after that Cleveland game, Charlotte has been okay, right? Like, they've played pretty well. No, I take that back. They're 7-3.
We're getting pretty far ahead in the schedule now.
Well, I'm just looking at the stretch, and for me, what's a lot more important than, and I said this already, so I'm not gonna, I promise I won't repeat myself again, but what's a lot more important to me than the actual wins that they take over this next 12 games is the ability to remain optimistic, because,
and the quality of play.
Yeah. And yeah, the overall quality of play, the optimism, you know, continuing. And somehow, you know, when they come out of this next 12, you're looking at, you know, very competitive games that the Lakers could play in after that. And this is after they've, you know, their start of the season was pretty tough. They remained optimistic there. There's no reason to think, based on what we've seen from this from these Lakers, that they wouldn't remain optimistic even after this stretch.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think if they we're going to learn a lot about the team over this next 12 game stretch, and how much of this optimism and fun and they're enjoying each other's company and the chemistry is related to the new culture, and how much of it is related to the success that they're having with the new culture. How do they endure what's most likely going to be a tough period, I think, is what I'm going to be looking for.
Absolutely. It's about growth, and they're very, you know, even if they're playing tough competition, growth can still occur. And yeah, that's what you're hoping for.
I mean, it's like you're arguably showing more growth by staying in a close game against San Antonio than you are by beating the Nets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would. Yes, that's a great point. If the Lakers are close with San Antonio in the fourth quarter, I'd feel a hell of a lot better about that game than I felt leaving the Brooklyn game.
Yeah. I mean, it's about quality of opponent. It's not about playoffs this year, even if they're shockingly, like, somehow that is a thing that you can say without being put in a straitjacket. Like, that that was not a narrative that I expected at all this year. I think you have to hope that they're playing well and that they look like they're improving and that their chemistry continues to be good.
Absolutely. All right, so that was a look ahead, and Harrison, good job on bringing me back in, because I could have just kept on going through the damn
schedule. Yeah, I was going to say, as we look at the next stretch after that, we're getting past the 60-game mark, and you know, I hope you guys are enjoying this new segment, Anthony Reads the Lakers Schedule to You. So, we don't want to get too far ahead. I think previewing almost 20 games is enough.
Yes. That is not the new segment is not me reading the schedule. The new segment is me.
Yeah, Anthony's BS trade reports.
Yes, the wild speculation. So I hope everybody enjoys this. I hope everybody kind of understands this is kind of tongue-in-cheek. This is all for fun. And let's see what we can do here.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Brian Scalabrine started a trade rumor this week the Warriors had to comment on within hours because he accidentally read some random, like, trade-making-up rumors website. So,
did you see the other stuff that website was reporting?
No, I mean, I see them in, like, there are a ton of sites like that that are not reputable.
No, one of the other things that they were reporting was something along the lines of, like, the super moon is going to kill everybody.
So you're saying my hot take was right and that Kobe better the planet should end.
Basically.
All right. Yeah, so actually maybe they are reputable. I don't know.
All right. So let's move on to this new segment. Again, this is called BS Trade Reports. This is where I get to have my fun and find new ways for superstars to find their way to the Lakers. Harrison, who is going to be in a hashtag future Laker today?
I really like what I'm seeing from Paul George. I think he's a guy that would look good in purple and gold, and he seems maybe a little disgruntled in Indiana right now.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is gruntled in Indiana right now.
Is gruntled a thing? I've always wondered about that. Like, if I was really happy with the way that this podcast is going, could I say that I was gruntled with it?
It doesn't sound like...
It doesn't sound positive.
No, not at all.
I don't know where you know, we're going to have to research this and get back to our listeners on what disgruntled, where that comes from.
Gruntled is
But for
actually...
now, we're going to figure out where Paul George goes to. And yes. That's, I think it sounds like the Lakers.
I'm going to find a way for Paul George to be gruntled on the Los Angeles Lakers. that's basically what we're going to be talking about right now. So,
all right, let's do it.
So right now, Paul George is sitting here on this extremely mediocre Indiana Pacers team. They are basically, literally, the definition of mediocre, sitting at 6-6 right now. The Lakers are sitting at 7-5. So already they're just way better than the Indiana Pacers. Like,
I almost said Kobe better, but Kobe's not on the team anymore.
No, Kobe is not. I mean, Kobe is still better, but
yeah, Kobe's still better.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. But when you're looking at this Pacers team, their roster is not awe-inspiring, right?
Monte have it all, but the Pacers certainly don't.
They acquire Jeff Teague, who at the beginning of the year couldn't throw a pea in the ocean from three-point range. And that was a disappointment. They have Monte Ellis, who is already 31, and a lot of his success is brought about by the fact that he's just an insane athlete. I don't think people realize how great an athlete Monte Ellis is.
No, because he's always on bad teams, so nobody's really ever appreciated Monte Ellis.
Right, and now you can wonder about, you know, why is he always on bad
teams? Yeah, maybe there's a correlation there in some ways.
But, you know, eventually that athleticism is going to slip, and I would imagine that, you know, to a certain extent, it's already started. Rodney Stuckey is somehow still on the Pacers, but he hasn't been good in like a half a dozen years.
I just learned that Rodney Stuckey is still in the NBA.
Miles Turner is far and away, aside from Paul George, the best player on, you know, the best young player. He's the future of the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, like he's their second most valuable player.
Right.
From a franchise. Like, Miles Turner is amazing. I'm not going to sit here and crap on Miles Turner. I'll make fun of the rest of the Pacers roster, but Miles Turner is great.
And maybe in a few months I'll figure out a way for Miles Turner to be a Laker. Why not?
Yeah, that could be that. Maybe that's next week.
Yeah. But what I'm getting at here is that Paul George is looking around at the Pacers, and he's kind of wondering to himself, they're 6-6 right now. I don't see how they wind up. You know, I don't see what kind of incredible strides that they might be able to take moving forward this year. And this is this year. It's not like it's going to get better next year, because they're, you know, they don't have very much leeway because Paul George is making so much money. Monte Ellis's contract, I believe, maybe comes off of the books. But
no, it's guaranteed. They have Monte. They have Paul George at almost $20 million locked in next year. Thaddeus Young at almost $15 million. Monte Ellis at a little over $11 million, and Al Jefferson at almost $10 million.
Yeah, so that's a tire fire.
Miles Turner at like a little under $3 million. So
and. If I'm also, like, if I'm Paul George, I'm looking at Larry Bird, and he traded George Hill, like, he somehow lost two straight George Hill trades. Like, he traded.
I can't wait for him to trade Miles Turner for George Hill to get him back when he realizes his mistake.
I'm looking forward to it. So, we figured out why Paul George might be frustrated in Indiana, and plus, he lives in Indiana, which is, like, that has to stink.
How dare you? There are many fine residents of Indiana. Shout out to Jacob Rude.
I was going to say, like, he has to live in the same state as Jacob Rude. Like, that would, in and of itself. Paul George is going to be a free agent in the summer of 2019, which means he has 2 years of contract eligibility in Indiana. And what you have to wonder is, they're dealing. If they were to just float Paul George's name out there right now, this is about as high as leverage as it's like. It might go up a little bit from now until next year, but then after next year, their leverage just falls off of a cliff because
teams say I can get him this summer in free agency.
Yeah, why?
Nothing.
Why would I offer anything for him at all? Right. And
yeah.
So. I think the Lakers would have to overpay to get him this year, and I wouldn't be really a proponent of trying to get him this year.
They probably have to give up at least two members of the young core.
Yes, they would. It would probably take Russell and probably Randall. That's my guess with those two guys.
Yeah.
Or if the Pacers are hoping that they could replace, you know, Paul George's direct position, the Lakers give up Ingram and Russell. But I don't see a situation in which the Lakers don't have to give up Russell and another.
And if you're giving up Ingram forward. And Russell, then, like, really, what are you building?
Exactly. So trading for him this year doesn't make any sense. So, you know, if you see, you know, for the listeners of the show, if you see that trade rumor float out there, just don't even click it.
Use your common sense. That's not something that is very likely to happen unless, you know, Jim Buss decides, like, I've really got to avert that deadline, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. So now next year after the Pacers, let's see what they might look like in terms of the playoff spot.
They'll probably still rally and make the playoffs this year.
It's close. It took a lot more to get into the Eastern Conference playoffs last year than I expected, right? And right now, directly below them, the Bucks are somehow not in the playoffs right now. And
No, that's not that surprising. The Bucks lost Chris Middleton, and yeah, they aren't going to be very good.
I actually still think that they can. I like the Bucks roster better than the Pacers, even without Chris Middleton. And I think Chris Middleton's going to make his way back by the end of this year.
Maybe by the very end.
Right. So what I'm saying is if the Pacers, even if they squeak in, right, they're going to get smoked in the first round by the Cavs or by the Raptors or whoever it might be. And
yeah.
If you're Paul George, you're kind of looking around saying, like, I don't want to be in this NBA purgatory that is the perennial 8 spot, maybe 7 spot, just to get smoked out of the first round every year, right? And I don't think – he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who is going to go out and demand a trade. But I do think he might, you know, whisper into his agent's ear, like, hey, either we get significantly better significantly quickly, or you guys are probably better suited to move me anyway. And if they are, you know, looking to move him, the Lakers do have the assets to kind of make this kind of thing work. Now, the unfortunate thing is that they have the assets that are concrete in their hand assets. They aren't draft picked that kind of assets that other teams might have. But, you know, if the Pacers do say, hey, it just takes, you know, one blue chipper and one medium chipper. Like if the Pacers go to the Lakers, not they won't do that this year because they have as much leverage as they do right now. But if the Pacers go to the Lakers and say, hey, Paul George for Larry Nance Jr., a future first rounder, and D'Angelo Russell, what do you say?
I don't know.
You kind of have to listen to that trade offer, right? And really,
yeah, you got to think about it. Yeah. So
what I'm saying is, again, and this isn't something that's going to take place this year. So as much fun as it is to look at the stuff this year, because the Lakers are taking these steps forward, it's not going to happen. But next year, this is something to kind of keep an eye on and say, yeah, I could kind of sort of see him. And he fits perfectly on the Lakers. Like, he would be him and Brandon Ingram on the wings would just be heavenly.
But Anthony, the only problem with like this whole thing to me is that the Lakers don't need a wing in 2019. They have Lou Alding under contract still.
How much is Lou Alding? Just for S and G's, what is Lou Alding making in 2019?
$18,810,000.
Here's to hoping for an amnesty clause in the next CBA negotiations. And if there is,
or Kobe like taking Lou Alding to Germany for knee thing, you know, blood infusion or whatever.
I don't even think that would save him. Like Lou Alding jumps like he's standing on thin ice.
Yeah, Lou Alding, I'm pretty convinced, needs to take a little break.
Yeah.
Right now. Like, get rest up.
So this has been the BS trade reports. And in this case, it was Paul George. It's kind of tough to...
Brian Scalabrine, if you're listening to this, this isn't an actual rumor. Don't go and report it on the radio.
No. And anybody who would want to write this, you could write it, but there's not much to write. It's tough because Paul George has two additional seasons on his contract after this one. But as we move along in this segment, there are guys in the NBA who have fewer than that, who the Lakers could potentially look at and have to give up less for. So that'll be kind of fun. And at the end of the day, it's all wild speculation. I'm not a journalist. I get to go out and say dumb things and see what people think about them.
Anthony's sauces are just like the barbecue sauce bottle that he uses to flavor his food.
Man, I had some great lasagna tonight. All right.
Barbecue sauce?
No, spaghetti sauce, weirdo.
Okay, I was gonna say you're a monster. Anyway,
anywho,
this got off track. So we're gonna talk a little Z League, right?
Yeah. Yes. Give us your. You are going to be there tomorrow. I just spoke for the last 5-10 minutes. Give us your Ivica Zubac D League preview for tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that the defenders are going to win the game just because there aren't really players in the NBA of Ivica Zubac's caliber. So mm-hmm. I think like to expect D-League players to guard him is just unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But
last night, Zach Harper admitted that he would trade Karl Anthony Towns for Zubac straight
yeah.
up. Maybe even give up a pick to go back in the Lakers' direction.
Another trade rumor. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I think Zubac, I'm very interested to see how the defenders use him tomorrow, because they've been talking kind of they talked all media day. Everyone to a man was talking about how fast they wanted to play and how blown away they were with the pace the team was playing at. And Zubac is quite a few things, but pace and space, run and gun center. is not necessarily what you would think of with him. Now, like, he can move for a guy his size, but it's for a guy his size, not just plain can move. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what types of adjustments they make to incorporate him, because obviously if the Lakers are sending him down, you make adjustments to incorporate him. Like, the reason that the teams hire their D-League coaches and have synergy between these two organizations is so that they can kind of cater and use these for these picks or these younger guys that they send down the way that they want and get a look at them in the types of situations that they want to. So I would imagine the defenders would play a little bit slower tomorrow, which will, you know, it'll be interesting to see Zubats get some post-up looks and see if he continues to look as strong as he did during summer league and in limited minutes against the Hawks.
Off the top of the head, I believe there's continuity between the sets and the system that the Lakers going to be running, that the Lakers run and that the defenders are going to be running, right?
Yes, there are. Kobe Carl was with the Lakers during training camp specifically to take some of their stuff. Now, not everything is the same because they have very different players and a very different roster. So, you know, they took some of what worked and some of the stuff is different, but there are a lot of similarities.
Now, on top of that point, you mentioned the pace and space stuff. The one thing that I noticed, and Ivica Zubac was a very quickly became a fan favorite out there in Vegas over the summer. And the one shortcoming that I saw was that he just couldn't stay on the court when the game became overly athletic.
So, yeah, I mean, he's a big, big guy. That's tough for him.
Right. And so you have to ask yourself, so in terms of what the entire Lakers organization is looking for, it makes sense for the defenders to slow down to make the system work for Zubats tomorrow, because chances are, of everybody playing in tomorrow's game, nobody means more to the Lakers organization than does Ivica Zubats.
Right? Yeah, I think that's fair to say, unless they decide to send Brandon Ingram down randomly last minute or something, which I would not anticipate. Don't hold your breath, people.
Yeah, don't. That is definitely not happening, because if they send Brandon Ingram down and Luol Deng actually dies, then the Lakers are kind of in a
right. Okay.
But what I'd be watching for tomorrow with Zubats is one. Foul control, right? Staying out of foul trouble.
Yep.
Making sure that, you know, because that was kind of a thing even when he played against the Hawks, and he played fairly well against the Hawks, and he was going up against a really physical Dwight Howard in that game that, you know, he couldn't avoid foul trouble with. But, you know, tomorrow, who do they play tomorrow? It doesn't even matter.
The Rio Grande Valley Vipers. I cannot give you a in-depth preview of their roster. Yeah,
I don't even think their coach can.
Okay.
but what I'm looking for tomorrow, would I be disappointed to find out?
The fouls front, though?
Yeah.
Zubats is averaging 8 fouls per 36 minutes.
Yeah, that seems illegal.
Fun fact, Meta World Peace is averaging 12.5 per 36 minutes.
Are they going to send Meta World Peace down to the D-League this year? I would love it if they did.
I think Meta World Peace might be committing more violations this year in games than he did during, you know, the Pacers era.
So yes, that would be something I'd be disappointed to find out tomorrow if you know, you're looking at the game recap and you're looking at the fouls, and Ivica Zubats is, you know, wasn't able to stay on the court because of foul trouble. Like, that's something that, if that happens, you kind of say, well, that's too bad, right?
Yeah.
On the plus side, what I'd be looking forward to is field goal percentage, because he is so big, and he is such a outlier from the typical D-League player, because everybody in the D-League seems to play faster than in the NBA, right? And if he's able to keep up with that pace and shoot at a decent clip and stay out of foul trouble, then I would consider that a win, no matter what the actual outcome of the defender's game might be.
Yeah, and the defenders are actually, like, roster-wise set up pretty well to put him in a situation to have success. Now, I'm not sure if they're going to start Justin Harper or Travis Weir next to him, but both of those guys can shoot and space the floor from the four position for him a little bit. They have Josh Magette, who's one of the best, who's arguably the best playmaker in the D League. And so he's like, he'll be able to put Ivica in positions out of the pick and roll, like get him a good pass and things like that. And then on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you have Vander Blue, who's very good at slashing to the basket and getting shots up, which should leave Ivica with chances for offensive rebounding opportunities when they don't go in. So, you know, they have like a lot that he's going to get a chance to show what he can do.
Yeah. And that's the big thing here is, you know, it's easy to get swept up in, and the defender season last year was a lot of fun, right? They were in the D League championship.
Yeah. They went all the way to the finals and forced a third game.
So they came, yeah, they were a win away from winning the D-League championship, and that's cool for the players on that team. But in terms of what the Lakers organization is a lot more interested in, it's Ivica Zubac's growth, or whoever they happen to send down there, that player's growth, and it isn't even close. And so I'm actually really looking forward to, do you think... All right, if we were to tally up the minutes by the end of the season, do you think Zubac plays more minutes in the D-League, or do you think he plays more minutes for the Lakers?
That's a good question, actually. I haven't thought a whole lot about that. I'd guess Lakers, actually. I think towards the end of the year, I think they may bring him up and actually start giving him minutes.
I would have said that before the year started. And if you know, we talked about the Lakers' 12-game stretch a second ago or a few minutes ago, and if they do go 0-12 in that stretch, now you're looking at a completely different, you know, outlook.
That's true. That's a good point.
If you're looking
if they're fighting for a playoff spot, they probably aren't bringing him up, because even if they're trying to develop team, you know, you're trying to develop your young players. That's, you know, you're produce right now in that situation.
Right.
Which is most of them, just not quite. Zubac isn't quite there yet, especially with how good Tarik Black has been and how good Timofey Mozgov has been.
Right. So, and again, that isn't, that's not a, you know, there are a lot of Zubac fans out there, and I'm among them.
Yeah, I think both of us think he's going to be a contributor for sure.
Right. Just not this year.
Yeah, I think this year is that's asking a little much. And hey, he was the 32nd overall pick. You know, the fact that we can talk about him like he's a member of this young core is almost a win of the in and of itself. I mean, he's not on the level as the rest of those guys just yet as a prospect, but I could definitely see him playing a role for the team for a long time.
Right. So there is absolutely reason. Is that game going to be? Is it going to be streamed or televised?
I believe it will be on Spectrum Sportsnet, and if it's not, then it will definitely be on Facebook Live, which thus far has been a bit of a mixed bag from a broadcast perspective, but it will be streaming.
There's
and
plenty,
Eric Rothman and AC Green do a great job on the call.
There's plenty of reason to tune in. The Lakers don't play tomorrow. It's Thursday, so the NFL, like the Thursday night games for the NFL always suck. So
go buy a ticket. You're not going to get it. You can get a decent. I'm not getting paid to say this. You can get a decent ticket and get closer to what and get a closer look at Zubac than you can at Staples Center for a much cheaper price. If you got nothing going on, you should head down to El Segundo. It's like they put on a good show.
And yes, that people kind of think, you know, D League and it's second rate basketball or whatever, but it's very entertaining. And the
no,
guys
it's great
who the guys
basketball.
If a random D-League player walks into your local YMCA, they toast everybody.
Oh, yeah.
they toast everybody, and it's embarrassing for everybody around them. So,
yeah.
The you know, when you think to yourself, you think, you know, minor league, whatever, it's still a fun environment. I actually hope to get out to a few games this a few D-League games this year myself. Mine might go tomorrow. It's, I don't think I have anything going on. We'll find out. Oh no, I can't go tomorrow. I have to host a show.
Okay.
Harrison gets to live his life as he wants.
Yeah, let's plan out our calendars on the air. This is great radio.
You're not interested in this? All right, so that does it for this show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Again, Harrison and I do not hate D'Angelo Russell. The next 12
Breaking.
games are going to be tough.
Breaking.
I think Paul George is definitely a hashtag future Laker. I just have no idea when. And
very much breaking.
and Ivica Zubac is going to light up the D-League starting mañana.
Old news.
Old news. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, ServiceGain Enroll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS on SeatGeek to get that $20 rebate. As soon as we sign off here, get ready to hear a cool new sound to finish the show. That's brought to you by Matt Chern at churnbeats.com. That's CHERNEBEATS.com. The song that we're going to be playing is called Last Call. He has a lot of really cool stuff. So if you're looking for just kind of random music out there, he has some cool stuff
on that
site.
It's royalty free music. He's had credits on HBO, E, and OWN. And it's royalty free music that you can buy, and you will be able to do so and use it. Like, say, if you want to produce like some type of basketball breakdown video or something that you want music that you can use in the background of, royalty free, then you can buy that there.
And personally, like, instrumental music is kind of soothing. I like to write to it. So if you just like instrumental music in the background, he has some good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good stuff.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to everybody tomorrow. Shouts to Frank Bukowski. Mike Wazowski. Thank you.